Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year. It is the Red Men Originals podcast. I am Paul Meacham with Chris Pajak, Chloe Bloxham, Dan Clubb. Talking about Liverpool being top of the league, which we very much, you know, looked like we weren't going to be when we last, we last did these podcasts. We had Arsenal and we were all, and then we got out of it and it was all a bit stressful, and now it's sound. And even better, we've just spoken to Ped from Toffee TV and they've lost their last four games in all comps.
That's amazing.
I don't know when that happened, but it did.
Yeah, because I keep seeing them lose, but I've never added them up. I'm made up every time they lose, but never think, oh yeah, how many's that on the bounce?
Great stuff. Liverpool won on New Year's Day, a barnstorming 4-2 win over Newcastle United. We'll discuss that in a minute, and then we're going to go on to talk about the FA Cup third round game against Arsenal. But before we do, I just want to draw your attention to the fact that we have got, we're calling it a tour. We've got three stops. We're going to be in both the islands, all three technically. So we're going to be over in Belfast, we're going to be in Dublin, and we're going to be in London. If you go to Ticketmaster, you go to docker.uk and just says Redmen TV, all three will come up. But annoyingly, they're not in like date order, because obviously Dublin is technically international compared to Belfast. So yeah, there's two in the United Kingdom, which I'd never thought about as a thing before. Belfast on the 24th of March at the Limelight. We're then in the United Kingdom on the 24th of April at the Indigo at the O2 in London, before jumping back in time to the 25th of March to go to the Academy in Dublin. So yeah, grab your tickets for that one. It's going to be very, very good fun indeed. Right, Chris.
Hi.
We fucking battered Newcastle. Absolutely battered them.
Yeah, it was really good to see, wasn't it? I mean, obviously everyone's made up with the XG and all the shots and everything else, but like, it was just great to see Liverpool attack with verve and, you know, purpose and all that type of stuff. Like, there was a frustrating part of the game certainly as well, where, you know, you really felt like Liverpool needed to take the chances, but it turns out they didn't need to take the chances because they were going to have loads more chances. Yeah. And they were going to take some of them and stuff. But I think all told, when you look at the performance and the way that we did dominate Newcastle, and I know they've been in a bit of a poor run and all that type of stuff, but you can't take any credit away from us. We've got to go out there, we've got to do it. We know it's a tricky time of the year, we know there's pressure on us, because I think people are starting to think about Manchester City and they are starting to think about the title and stuff now. So to be able to go out and put a performance like that in against a very good side is exactly what we needed.
Chris kind of like scooted over the XG and stuff then, but apparently it's the biggest ever.
Yeah.
SofaScore have got a 7.11 to 0.6, I should say, for Newcastle. It was dominant.
Sorry, not only is it the biggest ever by us, it's the biggest combined by two sides in the Premier League. And they had like a point something.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, like, as well, when you think about it, that like, that's insane. But we had nine big chances on the day, and I've never seen that before. Like,
yeah, no. And that was just it. It was rampant, and I said on my post-match reaction video that it had like, it was reminiscent of the 90s games, because the scoreline 4-2 is not a million miles away from 4-3,
but
basically. But it really wasn't that. Their goals, I don't know. It's odd, isn't it? Because that could have been one of those games that was one of those nights when it's close and it's tight and we've not gotten the goal and we've missed the penalty and we've had the one chalked off. And then when they equalise, it could have been one of those nights. But in reality, I don't know. I never, even when they scored, I never felt arsed. It just felt like Liverpool were going to continue to batter them.
Yeah, I think that's it. And I think that stems from Liverpool being so
dominant pretty much from the outset, really, from minute one to 90, whatever it was. Liverpool were very much on the front foot. It had all the hallmarks of a vintage Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp performance. The intensity was there, the pressing was there. We were just all over in like a rash. They couldn't breathe, they couldn't get out. And I think you're right. I think even when they did have moments in the game and there were two or three, it never really felt particularly damaging because we were so on it. We were always going to create more and more and more. And I think in terms of the XG, a little bit of us not being a little bit profligate in front of the goal, a little bit wasteful, stems from us being a little bit wasteful and Dubravka having a really good game as well. But ultimately, there were moments whereby I thought, is it going to be one of these? Because we've seen it against Manchester United. It wasn't too dissimilar to that, whereby we've constantly got the ball in the final third, constantly got these moments whereby you think, this is it, it's going to happen. And then it broke down. And ultimately, going in at half time at 0-0 was baffling to me because it just wasn't a 0-0 first half of football. I know there was disallowed goal and the missed penalty, but even for getting them, it was like Liverpool was so dominant from minute one. It just should have been two or three by half time, then who knows by full time. But yeah, that was a proper performance from Liverpool and a bit of a statement for me, because Chris is right, like Newcastle, for all their woes at the minute and their issues, they're still a decent side. You know, they're gonna be in the top six or seven there or thereabouts. So to do what we did to them, albeit the scoreline flattered them a little bit, I think to do what we did to them in the manner that we did was a real marker from the Reds.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting because Dan mentions the first half, Chloe. I turned to the guy behind me at half time and went, that was a full game of football in a half of football. Like, it had absolutely everything. We crammed so much in. And as well, it being an attack on the cop thing, it did feel like the game's done. Oh, it's not. We're just on, but we're on top. And even though it was mad. Again, someone else said to me, was that 0-0 at half time, but having the full time whistle meant it was a wild first half.
Yeah, it was. You had goals that were obviously disallowed. You had so many chances. You had the penalty that was missed, then the follow up of that was missed, and obviously at half time it was like it was overlooked on the cop or in the stadium at least because of the blatant yellow card that just wasn't given a yellow card, and that was the main talking point. It was like Liverpool and Anfield was already getting frustrated, and we knew we already had 45 minutes to go, but you do not want to rile us up anymore. And Anthony Taylor decided that it was all about him and he was going to try and do that, and to be fair, perfectly honest, he set the stadium alight. And if Liverpool and if the atmosphere wasn't good enough beforehand when we were having chance after chance, and bear in mind, and the atmosphere was brilliant. Yeah. You know, it was like we were trying to pull the ball into the goal. Like, obviously, we've all heard about that famous saying, but Anthony Taylor made
sorry,
us
that
go
famous
up.
Saying, pulling when, the yeah, ball, pulling the ball, go
all ahead. The time. That's why we attacked that end in the second half. Yeah. We dragged that ball over the line. Especially, obviously, Luis García's goal.
I thought that straight away from the
yeah. But, you know, Anthony Taylor also helped us out because his decisions in the game might have been sound, but it was overlooked by a clear yellow card not being given and like a breakup in, like, I've got no idea what just happened on the lights on that.
John from Toffee TV came in and did a dive. Like Jota.
Okay.
It was either that or he was pretending to be a bunny. I'm not sure.
One of the two. Either way, there was just so much going on and it felt like he kind of needed a breather at half time to come and collect yourselves, and thank God the players were much more calmer than all of us inside the stadium.
Well, let's do Anthony Taylor in. He's fucking rubbish.
He used to be good apparently, but he's never been good for Liverpool matches, has he?
Paul Tompkins commented that like he's basically the second worst, but at least he gives penalties, because that's one thing he does. He's terrible at everything else, but he does at least give Liverpool penalties, which like Tierney never does. And I saw someone say like he didn't react to his song very well. I mean, like he got chance to got told to fuck off by the cop, which we did to Paul Tierney. But then Tierney actually then did a good decision and got like a positive song instead. Taylor never got that. He just got booed off the pitch at half time. He got booed back onto it when the second half started. He got booed at full time when he went off the pitch. Again, it's tough because obviously I didn't watch it on the televised coverage, so you've not got the gift of like all the replays back, and even the highlights will miss a load of those little moments and stuff. But the one Chloe talks about, like, it's a blatant foul that he gives advantage, and you just go, it's all right, he'll come back and book that. And then apparently there's a rule that says, like, you don't have to or whatever, but it's just, there was a ton of, like, stupid things that he seemed to let go for Newcastle, and there were a ton of things that he just penalised Liverpool for. I don't know. He totally lost control of the game in the middle of it, and that was it did work in the crowd's favour, but it puts you on really uneasy ground. It feels like you've got to beat 12 men when someone like that
plays.
Yeah,
and
like
it was constant wrong decisions, or decisions where you're sort of just a bit baffled. Like, I understand that the Liverpool got two yellow cards for dissent, right? Totally get that. But like, I was watching Newcastle players do exactly the same thing when he was getting decisions wrong, and no dissent yellow cards were coming out. And, you know, the amount of yellow cards that Joe Linton picked up, you could probably count on for three hands.
Yeah.
You know, or
well,
least...
he did one when he pulled, and we were talking about this and you didn't see it, but he pulls Curtis Jones.
That's
back
how he
by
scored.
Like the,
yeah,
like
he scored from that one.
We
literally go down the other end and score straight after that.
It's mad.
But it was, because he pulls him back, it's in our penalty area, it's a yard away from the byline, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And we go down the other end and score straight away, so that's probably why that one doesn't get pulled back or whatever. But there were so many from Joe Linton where you're thinking, how is this man still on the field here?
That's the thing for me, and that's where a lot of sort of the animosity and the anger stems from. But the Joe Linton one in particular, the first one we're speaking about, where he plays advantage and doesn't book him, because it felt like he'd already lit the blue touch paper on the game, and there was fouls left, right and centre, and he had his cards out, you know, constantly, it felt like, for the last 10 minutes of the first half. But on the Joe Linton one, he was living on the edge for so much of that game that it felt like, had he have booked him early on, he'd have been gone. He was almost certainly going to get yellow card at some point. So him not getting yellow card in the first instance was frustrating, because it felt like they would be guaranteed to be down to 10 men. And ultimately, he did get booked in the end.
Yeah, and his booking is literally, it's a cynical challenge. It's exactly the same. We're on the counter-attack. We're just actually further back. We're actually in a worse position in this counter-attack than we were in the first one. And he just completely, I don't know who it is. It might be Wattara. I've got no idea, but it feels like it just comes at him across the knees, and just, it's a cynical foul. But ever since I've been alive, I felt like a cynical foul or trying to stop the advantage being played when someone's on the counter has always been a yellow card. Yeah. Like, it's been a nailed on yellow card.
Weirdly, we got away with one, and I think it was Konate toward the end, and one of them, and he seems to overlook it. But again, you're right, it's inconsistency. And particularly those where you just know it, there's a feeling, isn't there, to certain yellow cards where you just know. And we debated a bit of this over the last month or so, of like, it is mad that we've become so accepting of such soft things being given as yellow cards. But if they're all given as yellow cards, then they're just yellow cards, aren't they? And that was where a lot of the frustration came from. When Joe Linton was booked, there's a couple of guys around me going, he's off, and like, oh no, he's not been booked yet. Like, how has he not been booked yet? He well should have been in the book.
And
by
also,
that
like, I understand the referees gave the advantage, and look, we might create a chance for it. It might be Darwin Nunes' chance. I've got no idea, but there is a 10-second period, or what felt like a 10-second period, where Diaz doesn't come to the ball because he's expecting a foul. Sabu's still on the floor, and there's no one, not even Newcastle fans, are running to the ball to win the ball because they know it's a Stonewall foul. All of us on the cop are screaming, it's a foul. And then 5 seconds later, oh, he's played on, he must have played on. But, like, there is a lot of confusion in that couple of seconds where he's played on, where really it's not an advantage because they're still running back their players, and our players, the likes of Diaz, isn't running to the ball because he's confused as to what's going on.
Yeah. I would say on that one, though, play the whistle. Like, if
just
play the whistle.
He's got
like,
it right playing the advantage. Yeah. What he's got wrong is not booking him afterwards. Yeah.
And, I was going to ask this question, Paul. Did he get the big decisions right in the game?
Honestly, yeah. I've got no idea. I just came away with an overriding sense of, he just wasn't very good at his job. So I don't, honest answer, I've got no idea. I've not thought about it beyond that overriding feeling of, I just thought he was crap. I just thought he was crap all told. And it's always counterbalanced by, I think if you walk out of a game that you've won and you're still annoyed by the refereeing performance, my general barometer is, I think you've had a crap refereeing performance. Normally you let it go because you're so jubilant that you've won. Do you want to do the penalties?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, would you class them as
they're the big decisions, and he gets them both right.
Yeah,
and listen, for all the ones that he plays advantage or he doesn't give a yellow card, he either plays advantage or calls a free kick. I think on the whole, it's a subjective thing when it comes down to the yellow cards, and I think he's got them wrong. But actually, in terms of the decisions he's actually made during the game, I actually can't fault many of them, and that's the mad thing, isn't it? Because And I think it comes down to how people talk about referees, and, you know, we're so ready to just go in on referees all the time. But when you step back and you look at the whole thing and you go, well, he's got two penalties there, and loads of people disagree with the referee, but it's quite obvious that Jota does get a clip.
Yeah.
And it's quite obvious that Diaz is clipped. so he's given the two big decisions. I've seen so many referees get big decisions like that wrong that actually Taylor might deserve a little bit of credit in that he gets the big ones right.
Well, I think the thing about it, and I've seen Jota be criticised more than Diaz for it, although Gary Neville, who we'll talk about in a second, tried his best to throw Diaz under the bus. You just don't go down like that unless there's a reason to go down like that. And I know, like, obviously divers are divers and, you know, there's some wonderful simulation in footy. But the Diaz one in particular, like, he's upended. Basically, he falls so painfully. I'm almost like, mate, if you're that prepared to go to ground in that kind of way, you probably just give you
the penalty. No one dives and lands with both knees on the floor.
Yeah.
It's just an unnatural way. You dive and you put your arms out. You don't dive and hit the floor with two knees. Because that's what actually looked the worst part of it, is that the contact with the floor makes him like fucking dolphin or something. Yeah, do you know what I mean? It's a weird way of going down, isn't it?
Yeah. The Jota one is the one that's obviously drawn the most ire, Dan.
Yeah.
I can see why people are debating it, because if you don't care for Liverpool or Diogo Jota, and maybe let's say you're a former Newcastle United centre forward.
Okay, yeah.
Say, slash pundit.
Yeah.
Slash Alan Shearer.
Okay, right, yeah.
Before I died in the wall, Mank.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you might have a little bit, you might, you know, take umbrage with it. But he makes contact. Mm-hmm. And it does look awkward, because, and it's similar to Diaz one, is because it's not like, he's not felled. He's not like, he doesn't have his legs taken out from under him and then he's gone. You know, it's not stonewall in that way. But, and I've made a point about how he carries on. It's to the Diaz one he's talking about. But like, Jota's ankle gets clipped. Mm-hmm. The next time that foot then goes to make contact with the ground, he goes down. Mm. It's not like he runs on that ankle too much, it takes two more steps on it and then goes down. He gets it. It obviously knocks him enough. It's a penalty. I'm a bit astonished at how much is being made of it.
No, I agree. Yeah, and it is a penalty. I think Martin de Bavke himself has come out since and said, which is pretty telling. If the goalie said, yeah, you know what, I've caught him. I think people are forgetting as well, and it's easy to do because everything is slowed down and sort of analysed to the nth degree these days. But when you watch that in slow motion, you think, oh, could he stay up? Could he carry on? You know, we'll never know just how off balance Diogo Jota was. And he might, in that split second, think, if I do try and get my shot away here, there's no way I'm scoring because I'm not steady anymore. I'm just going to hit the side netting. So there's your contact, down you go. And I seen Rafa Honigstein as well tweeting about it, like, that happened at such a pace. Diogo Jota's travelling at such a pace, he's rounded him, he's trying, and then he gets a clip, you're just gone. What, simple as that.
What I would say, and it ties into what you're coming from, Kieran Orr here, who says, one thing I'm not seeing anyone talk about is how our first two goals were almost like the archetypal City goal in getting the ball to the byline and squaring it for a tap in. I either said that in a post-match video or maybe me and you had that conversation after the match club. But I think the going down for penalties is actually part and parcel of that. It felt like a game where Liverpool were not there to fuck around. It felt like they were just going to give, you know, no one was there to score the perfect goal. No one was there for the egos. No one was there to bolster their own numbers or feather their own nests. It was, don't take any, it felt like someone said, don't take any chances with anything here. Just be ruthless. And actually, I'm not saying Jota or Diaz could have stayed up, but they both got kicked in the box. Yeah. So, you know what? Take the penalty. And Diogo Jota's a prick, by the way, and so is Luis Diaz. Mm. So it honestly wouldn't surprise me if it did go through the Reds. I might get a man booked or sent off here, and we'll get a penalty and we'll probably score.
If they stay up and miss, we're the first ones to criticise the fact that they could have gone down. Because I've seen Sadio Mane do that. He was guilty that a lot for Liverpool. He used to get kicked in the box and try and stay up. And you think, hang on a minute, if you'd have hit the deck, I think there's one against Wolves I remember really bad when he got welly and he tries to stay up and make something happen. Because they don't trust the referee to give a decision most of the time. But you're right, I think having that little bit of that bit of snide about you, if you get contact in the box, down you go. Let them get it wrong if they want to. But yeah, I have no issue whatsoever with Jota or Diaz in either of those instances.
Chloe didn't think it was a penalty.
That's not what I said. Absolutely not.
What did you say?
I am absolutely made up. As soon as it happened, I didn't celebrate the in point to the pen spot. I said to myself, "That it looks like he's dived." His reaction, Jota's reaction, was my thing. Because usually, like, you know, at this point, it's 3-2. This is to kill the game in the last couple of minutes. And if a penalty is being given, I'd usually expect a bit more from Jota.
Do you think he's worried that he has made it look a bit
maybe
like
theatrical.
Yeah,
because I just kept looking at Jota, and he just walked away. He'd face the referee. The referee gave it, and he just there was no reaction.
But he throws his arms up in the air as he's turning around to the referee, Chloe.
I think he half-hearts that. I really do. I don't think he... As soon as I saw it, I thought to myself...
Was it the other end of the...
Yeah, okay. It was the anyway end. So it's not our end. So we literally are guessing here. But I was like, his reaction's not telling me that's a burn. I've seen it. Look, does he go down very, very easily? Yeah, he does. But there's also contact there. And I don't know the speed he's going at. I don't know how that can impact his direction or, you know, and he could have maybe tweaked his ankle. I've got no idea. But at the time, I thought that's a bit theatrical. That I was worried it wasn't going to be given. Was given. And I absolutely adore that he's that much of a shithouse that he's caused so much controversy. And he has the audacity to put a photo of that moment up on his Instagram and Twitter to just make the fume a little bit mad. Yeah, loved it all. Now I've seen it, there's 100% contact. Do I think he could have stayed up? Yeah. Do I care that he's not?
That was the thing when I was watching it live. Obviously, we were in the studio, but we didn't have the commentary on or anything like that. And my first take was, I'm surprised he's not tried to stay up more mm-hmm. than anything, because it felt like it was an easy finish, yeah, to be honest. It felt like as a goal scorer, Diogo Jota would know that he's not on pens and would want to get the goal himself, because mm-hmm. that's what he lives for. Mm-hmm. So I think it must have been quite bad for him to actually go down.
Yeah.
Because I don't think his first instinct is to go down, and it's never been to go down. It's to put the ball in the back of an empty net.
Yeah.
And because he's rounded the keeper and everything else, he deserves to get that goal, yeah, mm-hmm. because he's done it brilliantly. He's tricked the keeper into thinking he's going to play a shot and then just dragged it round him, and he knows it's his goal to take. So the contact must have been bad enough for him to fall over, and I think that's where it comes down on. But I did look at it, same as Chloe, and think, I think he could have stayed up. But, you know, I'm not the fella running through on goal who's been
exactly.
clipped.
Yeah. So Alan Shearer, we'll do two pundits. Dan, Alan Shearer.
Yes.
Thought it was... fucking embarrassing.
He did, yeah.
He co-tweeted that, didn't he?
Yeah. And you found a sensational Alan Shearer quote, mm-hmm. which I will read right now. Alan Shearer on Suarez in 2014, he said, I think it's a penalty. I think you've got to give the benefit of the doubt to Suarez there. I know he's gone down too easy at times. If Guzan's going to be silly enough to come rushing out like that on a wet pitch, sliding out, what is Suarez expected to do here? Is he meant to jump over him, get out the way and hurdle out of the way so he doesn't make contact with him? Part of a forward's job is when you're racing towards the ball with a goalkeeper, part of your job is to try and get there first and toe poke the ball past him. Then the keeper's got a problem, because once the keeper goes down, he's not in control of his body. If the keeper's going to be that stupid to come running out at pace when he can't control himself, he's asking for trouble. He's asking for problems.
I rest my case, Your Honour.
was that from last night or from 10 years ago?
That was from 10 years ago.
Okay.
That, yeah. So he basically
comes across like it was about last night.
He basically said, if the keeper comes out and makes contact, more fool him. And what happened last night, Alan? Keeper came out and made contact.
On a wet pitch.
The differences are, however, that one we're speaking about there was Aston Villa. Didn't involve Newcastle, which could be why he suddenly changed his opinion.
Well, there was one pundit who did say it was a penalty. Did you see who that was?
No.
Phil Thompson. So the bias pundit thing might be real.
Well, yeah, but I think this is the thing about this. People forget this. And because I think Alan Shearer is a really good pundit, yeah, by the way, really, really good.
Except when it involves Newcastle.
Except for the Newcastle, because he's a Newcastle fan. And this is where Gary Neville's are becoming a bit of an annoyance when it comes to his coverage of stuff, because not only is he a Manchester United fan, being a Manchester United fan means you fucking hate Liverpool, and vice versa, by the way. I didn't have to listen to his commentary throughout the game, but when I got back, I had Sky Sports News on and his commentaries all over the highlights clips, which was really... And I was a bit like, oh, wow, like, what's happened to him? You know, has he had a bad New Year's? Has he got a hangover? Is he just a bit sad? Because he was trying everything in his power to, like, I don't know, pour scorn on all the positive things Liverpool were doing. We know he loves to, like, try and stir up a narrative. And listen, I love a good narrative. I do. I love it. It's one of my favourite parts of the job. But it really felt like, because he was like, he really felt like he was reaching last night. Like he was desperate to try and find ways to make Liverpool seem like they're in a much worse situation than they actually were.
You're right, and I've seen a lot of those. Again, we didn't have the commentary on, but I've seen a lot of those after the fact. But then I went and listened to the Gary Neville podcast on YouTube afterwards, where he talks with the commentator, doesn't he, after the game. And it's about 13 minutes, and it's a completely different Gary Neville. And he's like straight down the middle. And so, and that just tells me that it's pure emotion of when he's watching the game. And that actually isn't what you want from Gary Neville during the game. What you want is his football brain, because he has got a good football brain, but his biases lead him astray almost, don't they, at times. And when he was on the Gary Neville podcast, he was talking about how good Liverpool are and how good they've been, and, you know, the forward players, and how he thinks that, you know, there are similarities between the first year, sort of 16, 17, 17, 18 of Jürgen's Liverpool side, where you can see that they've got the raw materials, but they're just not polished in the same way that they were by the time 19, 20 runs around. So actually he's really good on all of that. But when it comes to the commentary side of things, he's just an absolute wet wipe. And he just can't help hating Liverpool Football Club. And it's like, it's all the groans and stuff that do my head in more than anything. It's like, oh, it's like, great, Gary, just like, that's fine for a fan channel, don't get me wrong, but you're supposed to be the commentator on Sky. You're supposed to tell us what's going on, not how you're feeling.
Yeah, it is. It's an odd one, isn't it? And I'm not against it. I'm not against people having bias, because that's what makes actually football a richer, more enjoyable thing. But Chloe, it's the fact that he portrays himself as though he's not. You know, he tries to come across as though he's above it all. Like, no, this is my cool, rational take on it. It's like, mate, it's not. It's like when someone asks you when you're in a bad mood, and you are in a bad mood, and you say you're not in a bad mood. You can't not have that come across, no matter how much you try. He is biased, and I prefer it when he's just obviously biased, as opposed to like trying to cover it up as though he's some sort of like football mystic or whatever.
Yeah, I'm just very glad I don't have to listen to him week in, week out, to be perfectly honest. And that could go for a lot of pundits. And the one that gets me is like the Diaz pen. Like, because I'm not hearing anyone talk about this Diaz pen really, aside from him, who thought it was a nailed on dive. And time after time after time of watching that back, at the time, and bear in mind, this is right in front of me. The Jota one is the other end of the pitch. So the Jota one, I'm just guessing. But this one was right in front of us, and it looked like Dan Byrne, I think it was, had just slid in and just clipped his ankle. And when I've watched it back, he clips him, but his ankle also then gets stuck a little bit under Dan Byrne's leg. Well, that's what happens when you dive in the box, when a player with the ball right at his feet. And bear in mind, I thought Diaz was brilliant. He's not had a good couple of weeks, couple of months, but you know what, he was really, really good, and he's got such good close control. And when you dive like that to try and win a ball in the box, and you've got Luis Diaz there with the ball, you're not getting the ball. So I thought that was a nailed on penalty. So I've got no idea why even that he decided to try and make out that Luis Diaz was just a big diver.
It's that thing of like, I know what he's doing. I'm on to what he's doing there. It's like, you know, because I'm a former professional player and a professional pundit, so I know, trust me, ladies and gentlemen, here's my insight. I know what he's doing there. It's like, shut up, it's a fucking penalty.
Harry Kane has done that for the past 10 years. It's
clever then, though.
Yeah, very clever.
It is clever.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely break out the Family Guy meme in those situations. Like, Luis Diaz, I just was interested to talk about him, Chris.
There was a point there, wasn't there, where he did very much Sadio Mane, I'm going to drag us over the line and I will not be denied type of Luis Diaz performance. And, you know, obviously he has the goal disallowed, doesn't he? And then he gets a penalty a couple of minutes later and he's standing in front of the cop after the penalty, giving it all that as well, isn't he? He definitely, you know, for me, plays better with Kurt Jones inside of him than Gravenberg. And I think he probably played better for not having Kostas Tsimikas, because I've been saying for a sort of a few weeks now that I think Robertson's really hurt Diaz's form, or Robertson, the lack of Andy Robertson's really hurt Diaz's form. I never really thought as much that Kostas might be the problem in terms of Diaz's form. But when he played with Joe, he had a bit more freedom. He was getting the ball a little bit more. He was getting inside a little bit more. So I don't know whether that is something to keep an eye on, in that maybe he just doesn't have that sort of relationship with Kostas where they play together quite well or anything, but certainly stepped it up and looks like a guy who's playing for a shirt, and he should be, because we've seen Gakpo over there, we've seen Nunes over there, And he's now looking at it thinking, I've got to nail down a spot here mm-hmm. because everyone's coming over and the left wing position seems to be where he's rotating and I want that left wing position.
And moreover, Jota's coming in there he's back and he's scoring. You know, and he's making telling contributions in games. I was actually looking at our goal output, and you know we're ticked along really nicely. I think in terms of who's sticking the ball in the back of the net, but Diaz all of a sudden is just starting to be left behind. And you know, it's interesting. I'm starting to see those sort of comments of people saying like, "Well, what does he do? What does he bring?" And I think is I know what he can bring, so maybe sometimes I don't see it when he's not absolutely on it and absolutely mm-hmm. at his best. I just trust that he will get back to being that. But that performance then felt like the closest to the Diaz that we know, like Chris says, like just pure willpower. And he did. It's such a shame that the goal gets chalked off. Obviously, it is ultimately offside from Nunes, but it would have been just really nice to see him kind of get back on it.
Yeah, it's a far more recognisable Luis Diaz performance, to be honest with you. And I've been sort of reluctant to sort of pull the trigger on him being out of form, but of late it's been hard to ignore it, quite frankly, because he just hasn't been anywhere near the levels. And it's fascinating.
It's not just form that people have been saying, though, is it? So there's a lot of people questioning Luis Diaz
as a footballer generally. Yeah, 100% it is. Yeah, but it's that to me has never really been.
By the way,
that's a non-starter because we've seen how brilliant he was, obviously in his Porto days. But for the first 3 months of his Liverpool career, he was absolutely electric. But he looked like he was just playing without any fear back then, and just shackles free, and just went at people and inside and outside. And it's interesting last night how he did go outside a couple of times. He got to the byline once or twice. Actually, played a really good ball across the face of the 6-yard box, which no one was on the end of at one point. So, like I say, it was much more like Diaz, and I don't know whether, I mean, there's loads of mitigating factors as to why he's been off it. The injury, the bad injury last season, which basically wrote off the entire campaign, then stuff earlier on this year with his dad and that. So you have to give him many passes, although ultimately that runs out after a certain time period and you've just got to play well. But I think last night was much, much more like it. And ultimately, with Salah going now as well, we need players to sort of step up to the mantle, and Diaz looked like he's ready to do that.
Yeah, very encouraging from him. Should we do a bit of Darwin Nunes chat? Feels like we've got to do some Darwin Nunes chat.
I think we do have to, don't we?
Yeah.
He's a massive talking point again, and as he always is. And you know, I remember sitting here maybe a month ago now getting really angry about it and stuff like that, and you know, done deep dives with Josh Williams talking about him. And one of the things that Josh said that's probably stuck with me and has helped to sort of smooth the edges of my sort of opinion on Darwin of late is, you know, he puts a lot of stock into getting into the right positions, and you can see that he does consistently do that. But I keep falling down on the fact that, like, how long can he really go on at the centre forward without putting the ball in the back of the net when the chances are there? Because I think Liverpool have got the players where they can put other players into the number nine and they'll stick the chances away. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you support and you hope that he's able to turn it around, because if it does click, my word, he's got the potential to be completely unstoppable.
Yeah.
But you question whether it is going to click for him at the moment, don't you? I mean, the offside one for the disallowed goal was so close, but he doesn't need to be that close. He's miles away from Ben, miles away from... there's no advantage for him being a foot offside. He could have been 2 foot onside and still got to the ball in time, but it's a good run and it's a great ball by, I think it was Curtis Jones for that one, outside of the boot. Absolutely superb timing from Curtis Jones. I don't think he could have done any better. But in terms of, you know, we missed 5 big chances last night in last night's game of our 9 big chances that we created. Darwin Nunes misses 3 of them. There's one that bounces.
Are these misses or saves, though? Well, I know they count as the same statistically.
So the first, well, one of them is off the knee, mm-hmm. isn't it? Which I question whether he could have done any more than that,
yeah.
on that one, to be honest with you. There's the one-on-one, isn't there?
Which is the one.
And the other one, I'm actually not sure which one it is.
Is it the header?
I wouldn't have said that was a big chance, to be honest, but I think it must have been the header.
There's one in the first half where he has another good like shot across the keeper, which he says
Salah,
to save.
Salah put it in, like, does a one-to-one or something.
The one he dummies.
No. He has another shot in the first half inside the 18-yard box.
He's literally on at the keeper. He's just got to put it past him.
Is that the one where it comes off his knee, though? I think that's the one.
That's second half in the close range.
I thought the second half was the one you're going on about.
Yeah, that the one it hits his knee and hits the Bravka like close range. The second half, there's another one in the first half where he goes. I think it's before the one on one.
Salah does like a reverse pass
and he has a shot.
That will be it actually, wouldn't it? Because it was actually Darwin who played the ball to Mo. It was a poor ball because it was behind Salah.
Yep.
Salah somehow gets the ball out, and again, I question whether he could have done any better.
Yeah.
The commentators on the replays were saying, you know, it's a poor shot, but I'll be honest, I thought it was a brilliant saving, a good shot, and he's had the header as well, which I thought was a really tough header. The one where he probably connects best is the sort of half volley from tight range, where that's the
coming in on the right hand side,
coming in from the right hand side. So even just talking those through, the one on one's the only one that I've got a major issue with there,
because that's one of them where that's Salah just slots it, and you know,
or if it's Jota, he goes around and gets a pen.
Exactly. I think that's what Paul Tompkins described it as. It's a lack of, I'm paraphrasing, but like finesse in his choice of finishes. Like he doesn't have a range of strikes. Like look at Isak's goal as an example of that. Yeah. Like
that's what annoyed me most about Darwin's miss is that Isak scores one that's dead similar and makes it look really easy, and you sort of think, how many would he get up top for us?
Yeah.
And that was my first thought when he put the ball in the back of the net.
My thoughts on the Darwin thing.
The answer's 25.
Well, this is the thing, because I look at like how many goals City players had scored, how many goals Arsenal players had scored. Now Carragher did a big thing on a pre-match, I think, about like the lack of goals from Arsenal.
I mean, Salah scored more than Arsenal's forwards, hasn't he?
And I was a bit taken aback by how few goals actually Arsenal. They just don't have a headline goal scorer. Is the difference between them, us, and City? But like in terms of the overall output, Liverpool and City are pretty much matched. Liverpool have got more goal scorers, but I think their second top goal scorer in the league's got six, and ours has got, we've got two on five. And the thing about Darwin Nunez, when I'm quite calm about it, is whilst you've got Salah, and bear in mind, I'm well aware what this leads into. I know AFCON will talk about it. No one else has got two 15 goal forwards. And I think Darwin Nunez is a bit better finishing. He's not far off being that, to the types of chances he's getting and what have you. So I'm quite calm about it, because I think if he learns how to finish those chances, we're fucking unbelievable. But given that nobody else has that, I don't know whether nobody else has that.
I take the point, right? But Liverpool had Mane and Salah doing it. You know, Liverpool should probably have at least 5 or 6, 7, 8, 9 more goals this season, and we'd be comfortably the top scorers in the league.
Yeah.
And it's not the games that you win 4-2 where you feel the misses. It's the games that you draw 0-0 that you look back on and you rue those misses. And that's where a striker can really make his name for himself, isn't it? Because not only is he putting the ball in the back of the net, but he's putting points on the board as well.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the big thing this season, we're lucky in that everybody's having a little bit of a struggling sort of season at the top. But those six draws could have been 3 draws.
Yeah.
Had we finished our dinner in those games, and we'd be walking this league. It's unfortunate that we're not. Of course, he's a big part in the team performance, but I do think that somebody else up top for Liverpool right now, and we'd be miles ahead of everyone else.
It's Jota might be the Mane thing in that situation, is the point. You know, if Jota's fit, he's anything, he's our third top goal scorer, he'd probably be on double figures, I guess, by now. So that's what I mean. I totally get it. I do. I can't disagree that he needs to take more of his chances. But I look at it as a set, and I'm not. It doesn't dishearten me too much, I guess, is the kind of point I'm making on it. If at some point it clicks for him, as I say, we're going to be unstoppable. Nobody's going to stop us running away with absolutely everything. But this is the difference between buying the best and buying the ready-made, and it's a difference between Erling Haaland and Darwin Nunez. What will be interesting to see, Chloe, is what happens in the coming week, because it does feel like Darwin he seems to like passing the ball to other people. I know he's having his chances and he's still getting loads of shots, but like there was three opportunities in that game where he just turned and squared to someone when Fernando Torres just slots it, or Suarez just slots it, or pick a tradition, Erling Haaland just slots it.
Yeah, the thing I'd say about Darwin Núñez is just nothing looks easy for the lad. Like, it just looks like it's a bit all over the place. His first touch when he's in behind, it just hasn't been good enough. And I think it's United, the one where he's through in, and I think Luis Diaz or one of them try and shoot and it goes out for a corner. But his touch, he's in a great position, but it comes off his knee and it goes in a different direction. And nothing looks simple. And like you mentioned there, I think if it clicked for him, he'd be unbelievable and he could be unstoppable. But I'm getting very, very bored of him missing massive chances, because it's the massive chances, like you said there, where you need someone who's calm and level-headed to just have the composure to put it in the back of the net. We're now going to be without Salah. And Salah was horrific in that first half of footy, but in that second half, he turned it on because he knew he could.
He went to a new level. Boots?
Yeah, that was also a thing. He motivated himself. He had a word with himself at half-time and came out a totally different footballer. And he can go into that gear. I mean, the outside the football for Cody Gakpo's outrageous. Outrageous. And I think that's the thing with Darwin Núñez, is he's our number nine. He's the one that we paid millions and millions and millions for. And I think if it does click, he'll be sensational, because a look at the chances he's getting now, if he manages to actually bury them, can you imagine how far we'd be blasting these teams away? The problem is that the likes of Luton away and Arsenal and obviously Man United, in those big games where there's not a lot in it, and you and that one chance and that main chance falls to your number nine, I want it to be Diogo Jota. Yeah. I don't want it to be Darwin Núñez right now.
It was interesting we put Diogo through the middle, actually. Yeah. I thought was telling for that, really, Dan.
Yeah. He links the play really well, Jota, though, doesn't he?
Dan? Yeah, and like, he's a killer, isn't he, ultimately, as well, when it boils down to it.
I get this season some Heskey vibes. Well, you know,
from Darwin
I do, you know, and completely different actually style, but what I mean is,
but Heskey would lay it on to Owen, is that what you're talking about? That, Darwin does that, well, and it was a great assist,
because people talk about number nines and when they're not finishing, like, again, Erling Haaland doesn't, if he doesn't score, what else does he do? He doesn't get assists. Darwin, I think, is doing his best to keep himself in the team because he's still getting output. I think he's still goals and assists combined, his second highest for us this season after Salah. Sorry, but it goes back to that the finesse thing in front of goal. He just doesn't have that range of finishing. And Emil Heskey had one season where he realised he could like dink the keeper, and he scored a million goals and scored in every competition going for us and all that kind of stuff. There's just a little bit of that for him, but this is the thing. He's not scoring the chances, but also he's making loads for Mo Salah.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a thing, does Salah have as many goals if we put Cody Gakpo in the nine? Maybe. But I also don't know that.
And what else he's doing really well? He's come on leaps and bounds since he first arrived at the club. But the biggest issue around this whole conversation for me is the fact that I think we've all, in different guises, now said, if it clicks for him. We've been saying that pretty much since he arrived at the football club. So that's a sort of minor issue to one side. But what he is doing really well is his performance all round has improved a lot, because I felt at times last season, if he wasn't scoring the big chances, which he never really has since he arrived, this has always been an ongoing theme now during his Liverpool career, he wasn't really contributing to the team full stop. But you're right, his assists are really good, his passing's really good, his link-up play with those around him is really good. But also, and I think it's kind of, you mentioned Emil Heskey, I spoke to him last week about this very topic, and he kind of alluded to it. He said, when you're Liverpool's number nine, or when you're playing as an attacker for Liverpool, you've got to be the first defender. And that's even more true now in a Jurgen Klopp side. You've got to do all that pressing stuff, and he's doing that really, really well. So Jurgen Klopp, once again last night, was at pains to stress just how pivotal he remains to the side. Now, ultimately, there's an undercurrent in all of this about, yeah, but what about when he's one-on-one with a keeper? But what he is doing really well is he's playing really well. He's just not finishing these big, big chances that we're talking about. So how long can you go on with that being the case is the major question here. Now, I've got a little bit of sort of credit in the bank with him still right now. I'm not sort of pulling the trigger on him saying, right, it needs to be Jota, it needs to be Gakpo, whatever. But it definitely comes down to a situation whereby when you are playing these big games, and these games are just going to get bigger and bigger because we're getting towards the business end, looks like we're in a title race. At what point do you have to say, right, Darwin, sorry, mate, I know you're doing this stuff really well, but you've got to be putting the ball in the back of the net?
As long as Liverpool are winning games of football, it won't matter to Jürgen, I don't think, will it?
No.
The thing I was going to mention is, I read a stat earlier, he's averaging a goal slash assist every 96 sort of minutes, which is really, really good. And his vision and his pass for Mo for the first is really, really good. His touch for, I don't know what goal it is, where Sobo runs onto it. In fact, it's that goal, is it not?
The link-up one when he gets it.
And then, obviously, Diaz runs with it, passes it to Nunes, and he does the pass across the box. He's influencing games, and look, I think overall, like you said, his play is really good. But the problem is being the vocal number nine, the chances come to you. You're the main one who they come to. He's now, those assists, he's assisted Salah the most. Well, you're not going to have Salah there now.
Well, this is,
it's going to be someone else.
Well, this is the interesting point, and where the next month represents an interesting challenge for him, because I do think he's trying too hard to play other people in, because when it's not going well, you want to feel like you're contributing to Liverpool's attack somehow, and he is. He's got more assists than goals in the Premier League this season, which for a number nine is mad, you know. It's really, but I think that's what's keeping him in the team. Whereas Salah's not going to be there, so maybe there's a little bit of like, maybe just take it yourself. You know, have a bit of freedom. You don't have to think about what everyone else is going to be doing around you. Your responsibility is to stick the ball in the back of that. Maybe more people are looking to get the ball to him rather than Salah still be the ultimate focal point. Don't know, but I'd be more encouraged about that if he'd been doing a bit more of that going into it. But
it's a great problem to have when you're sat clear at the top of the league. It's a better problem to have there than, you know, last season.
Question marks over your number nine.
Fifth and sixth, isn't it?
Have you noticed a change of opinion at all inside the ground? Because again, this is a point Heskey made to me. It's like, fans, certainly Liverpool fans, will stick by you if you're putting the work in, if you're closing people down, etc., etc. They'll give you that free pass a little bit if you want, as long as you're doing all that stuff.
I don't think he's getting the blind Nunes chanting as much anymore. Still there,
little bit
but
of frustration.
It's not as like, he's not so a cult anymore. It's a bit like what Chris was saying. You know, you come out at the start of December saying like, let's just chant when he scores rather than chant when he misses, and see if that helps him score a few more goals. It does feel like there's a little bit of that, but still those moments where he's busting a gut and it's a great save, or it's all, you know, he's still getting the support because we're Liverpool fans. That's how we treat our own. But I think it's changing slightly, so much as
people are getting frustrated.
Yeah, exactly. No, go and be good. Yeah. Go and be good, and then we'll talk about it after.
There was a part where he tracks all the way back and he makes a brilliant tackle, and like then everyone starts chanting Nunes. But the one where he's 1v1 and he misses, and months ago after he'd missed it, we'd be chanting Nunes. And this time, everyone is literally fuming at the lads.
All those conversations going on.
Yeah, exactly. It's not quite the same as it was a couple of months ago, but we still have supported him. And when he goes off, he gets a standing ovation. You know, we know how much work he's put into the game, but you're seeing it more in the moments when he misses big chances, because there's now more pressure on us. We're all expected. We never expected to be in this position, but now we're here, and now the expectations of Liverpool fans are moving with it, which therefore means it feels like life or death in these games. So when you miss a big chance inside the stadium, we're more likely to be on edge when you miss it.
You're less forgiving. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's I mean, because it's been a mad sort of, well, it's probably 10 days now, but nine odd days. You know, we walked out of Arsenal thinking that we probably missed a big opportunity there to really kick on. We've had those ongoing conversations around what does top of Christmas mean and all those kind of things.
Fourth by New Year, probably.
That's what they say.
Impressive stuff, lads, by the way.
Well, no, honestly. But it one of the stats that I did find out, the last team who was top of Christmas and didn't win the league was Arsenal, of course, last year. So they share a similar hoodoo with us. But yeah, it's mad to kind of be it, really, you know, and it goes to show, doesn't it, that everything's still really fluid. None of us really feels conclusive like Liverpool are the business, like with a finished article, like we're going to go on this 15 game winning streak or whatever. But I'm equally not convinced that anyone else is. Yeah. The fear is City will, but equally City haven't been that yet either.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Obviously, I've said myself over the last couple of days to anyone that's willing to listen, but mostly my kids, there's like, the city are looking pretty ominous, girls. they don't give a shit, you know what I mean? But like, they are. But actually, when you look at the last 6 games, we're top of the form chart. When you look at the last 10 games, we're top of the form chart. When you look at the last 12 games, we're top of the form chart. When you look at the league table for the whole season, we're top of that. Why is City looking ominous? Because they beat Everton and Sheffield United.
Thank you. Said this morning, literally this morning.
To me.
To Chloe, because Chloe was saying the same thing. Chloe was saying, yeah, City look like they might be getting their act together. I was like, why? Because they beat a terrible Everton team and Sheffield United at home.
So their December's been pretty shit, all told. I mean, they're champions of the world, so fair play for that. They've managed to do that in a really shit month. But
I forgot they were playing a game of football and it's literally the Club World Cup. Like, that's mental. How little anyone cares.
But they've not had a good December, and I still have that fear because I think somehow that they're going to run 15 wins back to back.
Kevin De Bruyne being back is a thing.
But
Haaland
they've not proved
will come
it
back
this season, and this season's different to last season, and this team's different to the last team.
The big thing for them is going to be how they get through into that back end of the season, really. You know, if they keep De Bruyne fit, keep Haaland fit, then they'll have goals, but it's what's left in the tank. If Liverpool can keep on them and just keep chugging along, look, I honestly don't think we're going to go on that mad unbeaten, or maybe unbeaten, but not like winning run. I'm not sure we've got that in us just yet. Maybe, you know, we can certainly improve, and we have historically improved in second halves of seasons under Jurgen Klopp. But it's when the chips are down and they've got to reach deep. Paul Tompkins, I've referenced him a lot. I've done a lot of reading this stuff lately, and I highly recommend get him on Substack if you haven't. He did a chart of like how many minutes players have played, and like the vast majority of Arsenal's main men and City's main men have played between 100 and 600 more minutes this season than our most played player, and that's Salah. And like, we are running at a nice sort of level at the moment. We've been able to rest and rotate, and everyone else has gone flat out. And it's when it's neck and neck, and they reach for that gear, and is that gear there in April going into May? That'll be when I think
you can
it's
see that from the subs. That, you know, you can see Jürgen's made 4 last night. He's making about an average 4.6 through the course of the season so far, again up on last season. Guardiola doesn't make those subs in the same way. He sticks against us as an example. He didn't make a change.
Yeah.
You know, when we do with them, he's got a much tighter squad at the moment, but they basically don't have football in January. So for all the minute stuff that Tompkins has done, and I'm sure it was brilliant, they don't play any games of note so they've got a month to get people back. That brings its own question marks.
Yeah.
How do they return? Are they normally good at the start of seasons? They're not normally the best at the start of seasons. It feels like a bit of a pre-season for them, but also that like get some minutes in your legs type of thing is we're going to be playing a lot of games. They just don't happen to be Premier League games. But ultimately, when I look at Liverpool's side, the defence has performed really well over the last few weeks, bar maybe last night. The attackers had games where it's performed really well. The midfield's been brilliant since Endo's moved into the 6. And I would say that the midfield's been good while McAllister was there for maybe 4 or 5 games before that. We are surviving almost on 1 or 2 of our units playing well at the moment. I expect all 3 to start playing well at some point. So I still think Liverpool can improve this season. And so for all the City or ominous thoughts that I have in my own mind, there's also a part of me that thinks, we're not anywhere near the finished article and we're top.
Liverpool are pretty ominous in their own way as well, because you're right, because the games where it has all clicked are the ones that we really sort of, you know, it starts to stand out, like West Ham the other week.
Yes.
It all clicked. Aston Villa and Anfield was another one when it all clicked. We've had some really good performances in that, but you're right, it feels like there's still more to come. We said this like Darwin Nunes, if he just scores a couple more goals, it would be ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. If Jota has a good run in the side, we'll be ridiculous. There's more goals to come from Diaz, I'm convinced. There's more goals to come from Gakpo.
And Curtis Gomez. Jones is fine. Well, everyone keeps telling me there's more goals to come from him.
There's a goal from Joe Gomez, I am convinced. Joe Gomez, I'm really
not before
you.
I hope he doesn't score
now.
Yeah. 100% Joe Gomez. Just saying. Just copyright. There's definitely more to come from Liverpool, and there's more to come from City. But I think City aren't going to be as good as they've been in recent years, just because of the basis that they've put there. They might be close to it, but I can't see how they're going to have a better season than what they did last year, or a better season than some of the ones they've had when they've gone toe to toe with us. Because there's not that much room for for that level of improvement. So yeah, as long as Liverpool keep going. Very briefly, Endo was brilliant. Absolutely magnificent performance from him. Joe Gomez, brilliant. But on the sixth thing, Chris, Alexis McAllister came in
and plays the ball on the match.
And I'm not even sure how. I don't even think it was fully appreciated on the TV coverage because of the position of the camera. The run.
I was going to ask you what it was like because I've got no idea. I must admit, he goes through and I'm like, well, he's offside then. Yeah. He's got to be offside. Did the run start in our half?
You must have. Yeah, because because I'm behind it, so it's a straight corridor.
Oh, yeah, you've got no idea.
Where Jota's no depth perception whatsoever, but Jota's running through, and it's a straight, but it's the weight of it, the vision of it, and that's, you know, for as much as people are a bit unconvinced on McAllister as the six, he just does it in a different way. Endo's not playing that pass, so it was great to see McAllister come in and have a telling impact in that position. But yeah, really, really good. Really, really good.
But on the McAllister thing, am I right in saying, am I the only one that thought he was performing really well before he got injured? Like, did it feel like he turned it around?
Like two, three games before that, I thought he was sound. Before that, he wasn't getting close enough to play us.
What Endo has convinced me, though, is that, like, Endo showed me what Fabinho used to do, and he's starting attacks with tackles, and he did that last night, and he's done that.
His use of the ball is really good as well.
Yeah, he is. But like where he wins the ball back with a strong tackle, and it's like he just stands there and lets them run into him, and the ball bounces off, and we're on the attack. There was one last night, I think one of the goals might have come from it. He's fucking superb.
That video did the rounds again this week of like. I think it's like his first day at training, and Klopp talking to him about how we need your heart and we need your fight and all that. And I was like, ooh. And they haven't seen that reminder of that, and then watching him play, and you can see what he's there for. Look, when he's trying to chase the game and he's running back the other way, and Liverpool have overcommitted and got it wrong. There are very few players who aren't going to be exposed in those kind of situations. But you're right, when all the game is in front of us, and he's just going in, and he's just a little steel wall, and you can't, you know, and he'll just go in and smash it and take the ball and come away with it. I love that. He's him and Gomez, it's been a real toss up for this last month of who's been my favourite Liverpool player. And like, I wasn't expecting to say either of them, if I'm being honest, but I think they've both been absolutely stellar. I'm sure we'll have plenty more opportunities to talk Joe Gomez, obviously less so Endo as he heads off to the Asia Cup, which is,
I mean, what are we looking at? Three games. Bournemouth, 21st. Chelsea might be back for Arsenal.
I would have thought
plus
so.
Plus
the cup.
I'm talking league. League's the focus for me at the moment now. Everything's about where are we in how many games is Salah missing for in the league?
Is right, but it's not. Maybe we'll do this in the next part, but it's not what they're missing. It's who plays the games. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like Fulham games,
it's the knock-on impact
game.
To that. Yeah, exactly.
Because your options are limited all of a sudden. Where we got an embarrassment of itches at full strength, we suddenly don't have because they're having to play elsewhere. But we should mention Trent's shot last night as well, by the way.
Yes.
Ridiculous.
Please.
I really wish that had just gone in because that was just one of those.
Change the shot?
Yes. He hits it too hard for that to be anything other than.
You think it's a cross?
When I first watched it, I thought it was a shot cross, like just put it in there and hope for maybe an own goal or whatever. But the way he looks at the crowd afterwards says to me, I was close there, wasn't I? And it's like, oh, you meant it, did you, son?
Yeah. No, 100%. I think you forget sometimes. I know you said it the other week. He's really good at football, like ridiculously good at football, and he's getting more and more opportunities to show that. You know, this is Steven Gerrard winning the Champions League age for Trent now. You know, this is where he's at in his career, and every time he takes the field, we had a mad comment. Did I even put it in our group? Someone in our Facebook group put some mad comment about how they've had enough of Trent or whatever. It's like, what? You know, it's mad how two people can watch something and see completely different things.
Yeah. Fed up of him hitting the first man and all that. He's like, oh.
Did you notice actually on the corners thing that he was telling Sobo to go and take the corners? There was. I only noticed it when I watched the highlights.
Paul Scholes one, didn't
Well, yeah, that was poor as well, to be fair. Well. Like,
I want it.
Were you going to play 12 foot over Trent's head and then get annoyed when he doesn't bring it down?
Yeah, he's
showing at Trent.
Yeah. He flipped on Trent the second time, Max, as well, because Van Dijk actually had to do some defending because he tries to play a crossfield pass with his left foot, Trent left foot in, and Van Dijk was livid with him. Like,
the interesting one for the corner. corner. Sorry, Sabo was right next to him. I think he'd just taken a shot or a cross and it had gone over or whatever, and he just turns to Sabo and goes, go. And Sabo just trotted off to take the corner. I was like, oh man, the squad dynamic, you forget it, don't you? It's changed so much. It's like the way Van Dijk now, no one tells him to go back after a corner because he's the captain. So he just stays up for days. And it's like, lad, at some point, and then you're like, we were like, oh God, he's still up there. Yeah, he's the captain. And I was like, Canate's still up there. Wasn't the corner taking like 3 minutes ago? Like,
the shot by Trent in that first half as well, that just narrowly goes wide.
The left foot.
It's bobbling all over the place and on the left foot. Just, I think it's about just inside the area, maybe just outside. And the curl he gets on that with his weak foot, it looked like that was in from...
Yeah, it was a deflection on that one.
Probably stopped it going in, to be honest.
Yeah. But like, how good was Dubrovka? My favourite save of his was probably Gakpo's. I thought that was a really good save because it comes through a body of people.
Yes.
And I'm like, how's he got down that quickly to get that one? Like,
he's a really good goalie, Dubrovka, and it's mad how he's kind of like fallen off the radar. He was the one. Did Rafa bring him in for Newcastle? And it was a very like... I think I'm right in saying that. Please feel free to correct me in the comments if anyone wants to shout. But like, Rafa knows a good goalie, and it's like go and get yourself a good solid goalkeeper in there. And obviously Nick Pope's a good goalie too and whatever. But it's funny how some people can get a bit forgotten. When I knew that he was starting against us, I was like, he's got all the hallmarks of that keeper, the ones who are the second choice who have the game of their lives at Anfield. But yeah, mercifully it didn't matter. One last little point of nothing really, but the two penalties, Trent's done this a couple of times now, but it was great to see him and Van Dijk enforcing the penalty spot. Very Jordan Henderson, very captainly thing to do, of just get yourself right in there, get hold the ball, don't allow any shenanigans to take place.
Wish Trent would have kept it for the first one, to be honest.
I know. Well, that was the point where the second one came around, and it was a bit of like, is he just going to take this? They asked Salah afterwards, and he was like, yeah, no, I was always thinking that. Yeah, not a doubt in my mind.
Has he missed 4 in 10 for us recently? Like, that's not a great stat, is it?
No.
It's not James Milner, is it? But then it is. Right, okay, we're going to take a very short break. When we return, we're going to be discussing FA Cup third round action.
It is January, it is 2024, and we've got an incredible legend prize draw for you this month. Yes, it is Kostas Tsimikas signed Liverpool's shirt. He signed it. He was very kind to sign it. He's done an incredible job for Andy Robertson over the last few weeks, nay months. We can't wait to give this one away. If you want to get yourself in the hat to win that incredible prize, then you need to be a legend subscriber at redmenplus.com. Every single month, without fail, we will give away something incredible. This month, as you've seen, it's the Kostas Tsimikas shirt signed by the man himself. So you, all you need to do is get into that legend tier and you're in with a chance. Do it. Do it now. The best there is. Best there was. The best there ever will be.
Ooh, okay. Is he the 50th best signing of all time?
They'll tell you that they're the best player. He's the best player they ever played with.
Famous photos of him being carried off and stuff, and that was what he left everything on the pitch.
Champions 2.0, and what happened, you know, maybe we see today with what Klopp's trying to do with his 2.0.
How can he be this good? He's so much better than everybody else that's ever played the position. Yeah, okay, fine. I mean,
he shouldn't be ahead of Souness in the pecking order.
47,000 people wanted to pay him £1 a week to stay. That tells you all you need to know about what we thought of that guy at that moment in time.
He should be a lot higher.
Yeah, like world class. I think world class.
Quite clearly, who am I to question the vote?
He was astonishing, you know. His ability, his agility was just second to none.
Oh, have I forgiven him yet? He might be in my top 10. That's how much love I've got for him. I've done more for Liverpool than at the moment. Am I in this list?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, yes, welcome back. Loads of amazing stuff over on RedBullPlus.com right now, because we're in such positive, festive spirits still. Or maybe still a bit pissed, I don't know. You can get a free month of RedBullPlus Plus. Go over there, use the code KLOPP. There you go, K-L-O-P-P, simple as that, and get a free month of Red Men Plus. Fill your boots. All of January will be yours for now. Just go over there, sign up, and yeah, fill your boots, great stuff. Right, actually, we're going to do third round, but someone mentioned it in the comments, I'd totally forgotten about it. Fabio Carvalho's come back. Prompting my immediate question of, is that make him the new Nat Phillips? Yep. We've got an FA Cup game coming up.
We might have two new Nat Phillips in this month though as well.
Owen Beck.
Owen Beck is the other one. A lot of the report around it is just going to be, no, he's just going to go straight back out on loan. But I don't know. Feels like with no Salah for the rest of the month, you could do worse than just have Carvalho there as a potential backup option. Ben Doak's injured. Mm-hmm. Kay Gordon's not quite there yet, is he, after a very long layoff? I'm not saying Carvalho's pulled up trees playing wide in the front three for us, Dan, but I don't know. It feels smart to keep him round, yeah, unless they've got something else planned.
Oh, I would certainly be keeping him around for January, personally. And to be honest with you, if the ideal loan move wasn't there on the table, I wouldn't be against keeping him until the end of the season, because why not, ultimately? I think it would be the wisest choice to get him proper football. I think there's a few championship clubs interested. I think Southampton among them, and a couple of others as well. But I think the ideal scenario for me, personally, would be that he sticks around for the Carabao Cup doubleheader, the FA Cup game comes up this weekend, of course, Bournemouth. The Chelsea one's tricky, because that's on the 31st, which is, of course, dead line day, so that becomes really difficult. But I think certainly for the first few fixtures mentioned, let him stick around, let him be part of the squad, he'll get some minutes probably, you would have thought, and then let him go out on loan back end of the month. And the same for Owen Beck as well, by the way. I'd keep him around for those games, and then back end of January find another loan.
Well, Owen Beck is almost like the answer to what we were talking about the players missing. It's not the same, because obviously Kostas and Robbo are not like at AFCON or Asian Cup or whatever, but it's the who plays when you need to rotate. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of bringing back, Chris. And you know why? It was the response from all the Dundee fans.
Did you see the tweet from Dundee themselves, like thanking him?
They love him, yeah.
And like, that's the type of thing that you want to see when someone's recalled early from a loan deal, isn't it?
But how angry their fans were that Liverpool were basically taking him back. Amazing.
Love well, that's what you want, isn't it? He's our player, lads. Shut up. We can do what we want with him. Like, if you'd have signed him, it would have been different. But we let you have him on loan, and we've decided that we're going to need him. And it's the smart decision again by Liverpool in terms of looking at the squad for the next month or so, isn't it? And you might find that if he takes his chance, he might be kept around. You never know. But I doubt it, with the fact that, like, you know, the Carabao Cup are almost coming to an end soon. you want him to get that experience, don't you? But certainly him and Carvalho, there's minutes to be had this month.
Yeah, I mean, I saw someone, I can't remember who was on Twitter, was saying this about, obviously, January transfer window's open. Chloe, we've got our two senior left backs out injured for an indeterminate period of time. Robertson's not going to be back till February, seems to be the smart thing. Can you imagine?
Oh, I heard later in January was what Klopp said the other day, wasn't it? Has there been another update
but
since
that's,
then?
But to the point, he might be back in proper training and all that kind of stuff, but he's not going to be playing till February, probably, I'd imagine. But either way, that's still a little bit of a concern. The obvious answer for everyone would be, we'll just go and buy one. I just don't see a world where Liverpool are buying another a left back in January. Feels like we're moving away from specialist fullbacks for the start, or football seems to be moving away from them in that regard. We own two. We've brought this other, we've brought one of these promising lads back from loan. I can't see this is something Liverpool are going to move to address.
No, maybe not a left back. I'd certainly love a left-sided, left-footed centre-back slash left-back. you can do both of those roles. Because like you mentioned there, Joe Gomez has been absolutely phenomenal where he is, but he can't play game in, game out. And obviously, Kostas came in, has performed brilliantly. So you actually want to give him the chance, you know, in 6 months' time, whenever he's fit again, to really rival Robertson again, because it brought the best out of him. And you don't want someone to waste the talent or to just bring someone in and not have them happy or maybe unsettled. But we most certainly would love another centre-back with Joel Matip out. Obviously, that's an ACL, and who knows, he might have played his last game for Liverpool. We don't know. There was rumours of maybe a potential contract, but an already injured Joel Matip, who gets injured week in, week out. I don't know what him coming back after an ACL looks like. I think he's a boss footballer. But you don't know what that looks like. So, And like you mentioned there, the left-footed centre-back slash left-back was a thing that we've all been going on since the summer anyway. So if there was a chance to box it, I'd really like it. Do I see Liverpool doing any business? No, not at all. But, I'll live and hope.
Well, you know, I want a left-footed Joe Gomez shout from a month ago. You know, we've now got Joe Gomez effectively playing in that position. If we had another one, I agree. I'd feel a load calmer. I think it's one of those about Matip's time is basically done at the football club. And I said this when he got injured, I'm not against us giving him a new contract and keeping him around as a backup player because of his experience, and if he can still play a handful of games, fine. But if you're moving, Kostas has been really good in the absence of Robertson, but he's one, it's upgrading. If you're upgrading him and giving yourself another option at centre-half, that's the answer. I just don't. I think we've been a bit spoiled the last couple of windows, last couple of January windows with big signings. Mm-hmm. I'd like us to do it, but...
Love it.
Yeah.
Who's available, though? This is the thing.
Inacio's the one. He's got a release clause. He's the answer to what we're talking about. 60 million euros,
I don't see us spending 60 mil,
I don't know. I think...
What's that, 50 million quid?
Yeah, circumstances...
What we spent in the last two January transfer windows.
Yeah, well, exactly that. Yeah, and circumstances have kind of fed into that. So who knows? Obviously, the Diaz one was kind of kick-started by Spurs' interest, wasn't it? So if all of a sudden, let's say Arsenal, who've also been sniffing around Inacio, if they really sort of up their levels of interest in him, Liverpool get wind of that. Who knows? We might just fast forward something, because I still very much live in hope, because I'm with you. I think if we were to do a little bit of business like that, and I think the same goes for Man City and Arsenal, there's little bits of business all three of us could do in this window to just propel us to the next level in this title race. And I think for us it would be an issue.
Can we talk about how mad it is though that literally 3 months ago we were all sat here saying we need a DM in January?
This is a great point. So we had a comment here set from Mike Andrews, says if we buy Inacio and Andre, we will win this league. Opportunities do not come round often, and it's in our hands halfway through the campaign. I hear that a lot, by the way. And you know, and my often concern with this is that, like, Arsenal were sort of commended for doing business in January last year. Trossard. It actually didn't get them across the line. They bought Trossard and Jorginho, and that was seen as real canny. But now you're left owning Jorginho and Trossard, you know. And bear in mind, Trossard is now going to score, I apologise, in both of the games against us.
That's why fast forward in summer business is smarter, because you want them anyway. Essentially, and then, I mean, longer term, they felt like, the Jorginho one in particular, felt like they needed some experience, and just bought it.
But the DM thing, to your point, Chloe, I think is really interesting, because do people still think we definitely need a DM this season?
People still think we definitely need a DM.
I mean, people as in this room.
Long term, right now? No, long term, yes, now.
Remember, this is also a podcast. Long term, no, shakes hands. Long term, yes, wait, anyway. Chris?
I I'm convinced that Klopp thinks McAllister is the DM of the future for us.
Oh,
I think
Chloe isn't.
That's fine. That's why I said I think. I didn't say everybody thinks. Yeah. I think he likes McAllister as the six and will improve. And I think he thinks with his options at eight, he's okay with that. I would do a DM, to be honest with you. I would do an Andre, and I would do it for exactly those reasons that, you know, and I've said that it was Mike, wasn't it? Almost echoing sentiments of stuff that I've thought over the last few weeks and months and stuff, but Dan's right, you've got to bring business forwards that you want. So there've got to be players. There's not just like, shit, we need to buy a centre-half, let's get Ozan Kabak. Like, that's not good enough for what Liverpool needs. They need the future. And whether that be a right-sided centre-half, which, you know, 3 weeks ago I was saying I would have done that. Now, the injury to Costas changes that. Now I'm the left-sided centre-half. Left-back is the obvious shout where you can strengthen because he improves your team today.
Yeah, I think that's it. My point on the Trossard-Jorginho thing is that effectively they improved their squad, but they didn't improve their first 11 with those signings. And I think anyone Liverpool buy needs to be someone who really challenges the first 11. So if it's a DM, it's got to be miles better than McAllister or Endo, is my point on this. Is that, you know, and I don't know what, and Andre might be that, but I don't know that Andre is that. And I probably thought Andre was definitely it a month ago, but Endo's been sensational since then. And even if we think, oh, well, Endo may be missing for a month or 5 weeks or whatever now, you're not going to bring anyone in who's going to have a massive impact in that time anyway. And if they did, it would have been done by now. I think it's a 1st of January kind of decision. And again, Andre could have been that, I think, if we were desperate, if he was definitely going to be the one for us.
Yeah, we could have signed Andre, and we still could if we really wanted to. I'm absolutely certain of that. And you're right, I think the problem is with that, though, is our squad now has sort of stood us in such good stead. You've seen it last night, we made 4 changes, and they helped us get over the line, essentially. It's happened numerous times this season. So your squad lads can be difference makers between now and the end of the season, so that's another point. But with the Andre, Endo, stroke McAllister thing, I think Andre sort of sits in the middle of the two of them. He's the perfect hybrid blend of what Wataru offers in terms of his tenacity, his ball winning, and he's got that class and the technique and the technical ability of a McAllister. I think Chris is right in terms of Klopp clearly wants his six to be a ball player now. He wants him to be able to get on the ball and make things happen. I think Andre is just the answer to both of them. I think Wataru is a little bit too one way and McAllister's a little bit too the other way, whereas there's a fella who sits right in the middle.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem, is it? When you look at these players, you do have to think, what is Klopp as a manager? He likes the players that he's got at his disposal, and he doesn't like having too many options. And I know we only bought Endo for 16 million, but Endo's a part of the squad now in Klopp's eyes, and McAllister's a part of the squad, and Jones is, and Elliot is, and Szoboszlai, and Gakpo, and all these lads that we've got that can play in the middle of the park.
And Carvalho as well.
He will be like, I've got midfielders.
And we forget, by the way, that we do this every year of like, we always think the squad's missing something.
And then he buys a left winger.
Yeah, he buys another forward. But we always think that. But we forget sometimes that every club thinks that. No, there's no such thing as a perfect squad. And I'm always astounded when you play FIFA or Pro Evo and you go like a Barcelona or a Real Madrid and you're like, I'm sorry, who is their backup centre forward? Like, I saw like Tuber Moting still the backup Bayern Munich centre forward. Like, what? How is that a thing? Like, you know, like Lewandowski, wow, what a great centre forward who's his understudy. The lad who went to Stoke. Like, you know. So I think you're right. And I think the logic, My opinion always changes as it kind of progresses, because you get to see them do it. Like when we had the season, we had no left back and Milner did it. Like, you can't go, it's going to be fine, James Milner will play brilliantly at left back in the summer, because you've not seen him do it. But then you get through half a season, you're like, wow, James Milner's was a really, really good left back for us. And these kind of things develop. And I if Footy was on paper, I would still be going out and getting the amazing DM and the amazing centre-half. And I'd be looking for Mo Salah's long-term replacement now rather than doing it in the summer or whatever. But yeah, football doesn't happen like that, does it? You know, Jürgen likes what he's got. We have got loads of footballers, by the way, loads. And there's still a world where at some point Bajetic is going to come back. And don't laugh, but obviously Thiago will play for us at some point as well.
And there's two lads I didn't even name when I was talking about the midfielders. And they're Bajetic is a big player in terms of the long-term future of the midfield, isn't he?
Yeah, he might be the one we're talking about, by the way, who's the tenacity plus the guile.
Does anyone remember how many non-English spaces we are?
Well, it's another one now with Matip being out, isn't it?
OK. Okay, so, yeah.
So I think that's two now. Isn't
I mean,
that's,
there's one anyway, and now Matip's going to be out of it.
The thing I think is unless it's clear, like, look, I sat here when we signed with Torre Mendo, and I was like, if he's a good player, boss, but I couldn't tell you the first thing about him. And I think a lot of us wrote him off in the first couple of months. So we just was like, I don't know what we've signed, really.
I think I think everybody thought his ceiling was low.
Stopgap, yeah, exactly. But it turns out Jurgen Klopp knows exactly what he's doing. And that's what I think. I'd love to go out and spend all this money, but unless it is on the right player, then there's no point in doing it. And I don't know if Andre is the right player anymore for me.
We're in a position now where when we look at buy players, they need to be brilliant.
Yeah,
I think we need to buy really, really, really good players because you've got to start to think about at some point you're going to have to replace Van Dijk and Salah. Mm-hmm. They're the next ones who are going to be reaching that point of their career, and that needs to be done. And you need money to make that happen. Mm-hmm. Look, we're doing all right, aren't we? So far, it goes back to like people lose their time. I'm seeing it already. People are already starting to get really. I haven't seen FSG mentioned once in the comments for like the last 2.5 months. Point, yeah. But now January's coming back at all. But FSG won't spend. People talk about deep understanding of how it goes. Like Liverpool haven't spent basically 100 million in the last two January transfer windows, and would have been at least that, if not more, if Carvalho's paperwork had gotten done just before the deadline done a couple of years ago. We're all right, aren't we? We're top of the league.
Could be worse.
It could be a lot worse. FA Cup third round. Arsenal. I don't want to do this.
Hands up, your ass.
Every year we have this fucking conversation, and I'm well aware of it. But this is I'm going to ask the question, but I'm actually coming at it from a really different angle in my head. Who's asked about the FA Cup third round?
I'll go for that.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I'll go for that. Yeah.
I am asked. In that I don't want us to lose football games, but I am so calm about this football match because we often talk about the League Cup. I think if you get to the League Cup semi-final, I think it takes precedence over an FA Cup third round, regardless of who you're playing. But when you're in a League Cup quarter-final, there is a little party that goes, fuck that, and just focus, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Us going ahead of Arsenal in the league, Chris, and the fact that we've got to play them at the end of the month, going into February, we've got that league game's huge, and we've got the League Cup semi-final. Arse is not the right word, but I would happily, if you told me we're going to lose this game, I honestly now I'm not that arse.
But also there's a point where you can put the final nail in Arsenal's coffin this season already, isn't there? Because the form that they've been in, you know, since they played us, they've lost a couple of games, everybody's talking about them all the time and Arteta and his options and yada yada yada. To put a second team out and beat Arsenal would be gravy, as far as I'm concerned. That would be best case scenario. But you don't want to
beat them in the league.
I said it before and said everything's focused on the league for me right now. But like, that's why I'm putting a second team out and beating Arsenal's great.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. I'm not putting a first team out.
Is that what everyone else is thinking this? Heavily
rotate?
We've
lowered our expectations now because like, we know, like if it was, you know, Huddersfield or Portsmouth or something like that, well, you're much more ours because if you lose, that's an absolute shocker. But Arsenal have something to prove. I don't think where we look at our squad and we look at our bench and we look at the youngsters and we're like, oh my God, you know what? Kwanzaa, unbelievable, yeah, throw him in a Premier League game. I don't think they have that, so I think they'll have to go pretty strong. I think they need a performance, they need a result. And they're not in the Carabao Cup. They're now 5 points off top of the table. This, unless they really make a comeback in the league, and Man City will have something to say about that. It's not us that they also need to fight with, it's Manchester City as well. They need something out of this. Otherwise, it's just been another year of losing the title and not really coming away with anything. So you've not really improved on last year. So they need something. So I look at it and think Liverpool are going to put their second team out. Arsenal are probably going to go a bit stronger. We're away from home. And it's a vile first round for us. So whatever the outcome is, boss, if we win, if we lose, second team.
We put our second team out, so I'm going to focus on the league. Lads. Yeah. You won't know anything about that.
I totally agree with that logic. I think that's right. Then. But rotate. I don't think it has to be a total. It's not. We're not talking Shrewsbury type levels of team we're putting out here. But you can make, you've no Salah, no Endo. you're already missing your left backs. So there's going to be some obvious changes that you're going to have to make for this regardless, and understandable changes. It's just how much more you go. But I agree, if it's Quantzer at the back and it's no Van Dijk, if it's no Alisson, then that does weirdly kind of take the pressure off Liverpool in this one.
No, 100% it does, yeah. And I think Chloe's right. I think Arsenal's form will sort of play into the fact that they'll be desperate for a result because they can't go 3 defeats on the bounce, essentially, can they? Because that's very damning then on Mikel Arteta all of a sudden. The fact that they're home as well, they'll need to put a performance in front of their home fans. But yeah, for me, I'm arsed to the extent whereby I'd like us to win the game, but am I arsed enough to go full strength? No, I'm not even in the slightest. I would be making these changes that we're speaking about here. I'd be switching up the eights. You're probably going to see Gravenberch, who hasn't started loads of games. Lucas Bosley hobbled off last night with a hamstring problem. He doesn't play as Harvey Elliott instead and all that type of stuff. And probably Diogo Jota hasn't had loads of minutes. It's those types of changes. You're managing the squad minutes as opposed to wholesale changes. Just throw the kids in. Let's get out of this competition. It's not that. It's let's be clever with what we're doing here.
It's a pity Tyler Morton's suspended, so we can't recall him for this one.
Harsh that, by the way.
Very really harsh.
Alvin, cool. Just pull the back, the defenders. Who are you thinking here? Because I would have played. I think I might have played Van Dijk.
I'm going to throw this instead because it's my show. I'm going to throw this on you by a Yo Cool who says define second team pager.
Okay, so
Kelleher's got the Carabao, so
do we give him the FA Cup?
I would put him in this game.
I'd give him the FA Cup.
Yeah, I would have now. I would have probably Van Dijk and Kwanzaa as my centre halves
with Owen Beck left back. Otherwise, why have you recalled him?
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be. And then, is it Gomez right back then?
No, Bradley.
Bradley.
Which means I'd put Gomez centre back next to Quantzer and give Virg.
But he needs a rest, Gomez.
No, Gomez needs a rest. Yeah.
He doesn't need to move, he needs a rest, is the problem.
Yeah.
They say change is as good as a rest.
Well, he's had loads of fucking rest this season then. Because he's played everywhere, mate.
He's chilling.
So, in terms of DM. I mean,
McAllister
needs the minutes, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So he's on for 60, McAllister. Harvey Elliott and Gravenberch.
Yeah.
Okay.
With Gakpo, Jota, and I'd pick a right winger.
I'd like to see Luis Diaz play on the right for us.
Did not see that coming.
I think we need to play him into a bit of form as well. It's a little bit of an issue. And now, obviously, we have to be careful because we don't want to run everyone into the ground with the absence of Mo Salah. But I don't know what the answer is to the right-hand side. I think it would have been a little bit more Ben Doak if he was fit. Mm. It might be a little bit of, again, Kay Gordon on the bench. But of your choices, you know, if Jota's done it in the past when Salah's been gone, it might be as simple as him doing that again. But
well, annoyingly, I think it would have been Harvey Elliott were it not for Szoboszlai's problem.
Yeah.
And again, Harvey Elliott would probably have to start in midfield regardless of Szoboszlai's issue in this one, you would imagine. But I think the answer to Salah being away is probably him playing right wings. I think the way he does it now, albeit, you know, not Mohamed Salah.
The way Salah does it.
The way Salah does it now, the way he plays the game, is more akin to the way Harvey Elliott can do it in terms of coming inside and linking up, making that triangle, as opposed to the flying Mo Salah of just sheer pace, which Harvey Elliott doesn't possess, unfortunately. But I think for this game, I'd be tempted to go Gordon. I would be really tempted to go Kate Gordon.
So no shots for Carvalho, I was going to say that, yeah.
Would you? Carvalho?
Maybe.
Carvalho centre forward.
Jota Diaz and the right winger.
The one thing that's just a slight wrinkle to this, because again, you talk about the Elliott thing.
No, Gakpo. Sorry.
I think so.
Elliot right wing, Carvalho in the eight.
Yeah, I don't mind.
Or Gakpo in the eight.
I think maybe. The Elliot. I think Elliot looked good playing on that right hand side.
Yeah, he did. West Ham.
Like, this good is some sound second team, isn't it?
Because I was good.
It's managing minutes and stuff as well as people.
I was going to suggest. I'd forgotten about the Carvalho thing completely, even though we've just spent 10 minutes talking about him. Because I was going to half jokingly say McConnell and then put McAllister in one of the eights, but Carvalho does give you that option to chuck him in. He's not been great in those positions so far.
Sounds like a 43-1 this ball.
Oh, 44, Chris. You could do a 4-2-3-1 and you could put Carvalho in more of a 10 if you wanted to mix it up. I don't honestly really care. I have to be honest, I've never cared less about an FA Cup third round game against Arsenal. Like, and we've had a few of them down the years because of that safety blanket and the importance of the other competitions. the league, you know, and I know you could just lose to Fulham. It happens, you know. We lost to Southampton in a semi-final years back. But I don't know. I'm really laissez-faire.
So you'd be stronger in midweek, team-wise?
Yeah, 100%.
Go and get that Fulham game one.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
And aren't you off that weekend as well?
Yeah, we've got a weekend off,
play. Yeah, full strength for that Fulham game.
Okay, smart.
It's away first against Fulham, is it?
No, it's the other way around.
Is it home first?
Anfield first, yeah.
I'd be tempted to throw Kwanzaa into both of the Fulham and the Arsenal game, you know, and rest the centre-halves one by one.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Very interesting. Nice to still have a few interesting options available to us, though. The fullbacks one's going to be fascinating. What we do? Does he go two young fullbacks for this game?
He always has to, doesn't he?
But I think he has to go Van Dijk if he does that to our earlier point. So yeah, it will be interesting to see. Right, yeah, what would you do? Let us know. If you're watching on YouTube, you can let us know in the comments. If you want to tweet us at the Red Men TV, you can do that as well. And if you want to get more content from us, we're going to be doing the Bias Football Pod, where we're going to be discussing whether Arsenal are flopping. Flopping's an interesting word, isn't it, Chris?
I like flopping.
We flop all over the place. That's taking me to a dark place. I think you should come and join us. And if you want to check it out for free, use the code KLOP on redmenplus.com. We're going to be live immediately after this, pretty much. So come and join us.
Do you remember what someone said to Steve Pye on the bus once?
No.
I'll flop you, plum.
Brilliant. There's a deep cut Paul and Chris in private joke reference there for you guys. More of that shit over on redmenplus.com. Have a wonderful week and we'll see you all soon. Ta-da.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.